Welcome to this edition of the game. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo and Lisa Marie Latino. How are you guys?
Hey, what's up, Russ?
Hey, Russ. How
Doing
are
good.
You?
Doing good. We've got a special guest, Dan Duquette, who I believe is on the line. We're going to bring him in right now.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Dan.
How you doing,
Hi,
Nico?
Dan.
Hi.
Dan, thanks for coming on the show. We want to chat with you about the time where you actually were Nico's GM for a short time, and but also, you know, you're a big hit on XM Radio. I listen to you. I do the hockey side of XM. I haven't broken into the baseball side like you, but I have to say it's fun to listen to you.
I got to tell you, though, that's my cousin Jim you're listening to. That's not me.
Oh, Jim, I get you guys mixed up. I'm sorry. That's right.
But anyway, Jim's getting a lot better, isn't he? He's been doing a great job. I've been listening to him myself.
He has been doing a good job. Yeah, that's funny. I did get you guys mixed up. So, Dan, give us an idea. We just wrote a book about the 94 strike, 95 replacement players. Can you give the listeners an idea what that time was like and what it was like for you?
Well, that was a tumultuous time for people in the baseball industry. And, it's like that in, any industry where you have, a labor disruption or unrest or people can't get along to distribute the resources, and that's what it was about in 1994. And, from my perspective, if you're running a ball club, you want to have good relations with the players because that's your product. That's what you have to sell to the public. And there was a long history of labor unrest between the owners and the players, and I think the rupture in 94 was difficult for everybody. At the end of the day, I'm not sure anybody really benefited from that. Certainly, the players and the owners suffered, and, of course, the fans suffered. I guess one benefit would be that, both players and owners remember it, and, they make a point now to resolve the issues so that they don't disrupt the injury the whole business.
And Dan,
I've
noticed that. Go ahead, Nico.
No, I was going to say that's fascinating insight there because so many people just don't know. They only remember that time frame, and it's just awesome to hear that the owners and the players they're so aware of what happened that it's almost like it will never happen again just because of it.
Well, I think that people remember it. It's hard to. Forget. It just wasn't a very comfortable time for many people. My brother runs the human resources for Stop and Shop out here on the East Coast, and they were negotiating their contract in December, and he was telling me how uncomfortable people were, particularly the people on the workforce that were in the union, and they were afraid that they were going to lose their jobs. And that's not a comfortable feeling for people in the workforce. And when you're running a business, it's not a comfortable feeling to know that your business is going to be out of business. You're going to be shut down. So I think everybody understands how important it is to resolve these issues. There's only so much pie to divvy up to people, and I think baseball and the players are doing that now.
That's a good point. And, Dan, you were a noted GM in baseball for a long time, and right now you're not in the game. Do you get the itch to get back in the game?
Well, I'd like to get back in the game. I'd like to be able to reaffiliate with a team in Major League Baseball, and I'm currently trying to do that. I think it'd be good. I've been waiting until my kids had completed school, and our youngest boy Dana is just completing his senior year in high school. He's going to go to college next year, and now I got an opportunity where I can move around. I wanted to live in this area until all my kids had completed high school, and that'll be done in a couple of weeks.
Tell us a little bit about the Dan Duquette Sports Academy.
Well, the Dan Duquette Sports Academy is a 100 acres on a lakeside recreation in the Berkshire Hills of Massachusetts. And it is a beautiful facility that my brother David and I put together. And I designed it, and my brother David's a contractor. He ended up building it. We ended up building four fields, 10 cabins, a clubhouse, a administration building, and a huge dorm. And what we do is we run overnight camp for boys and girls for baseball, softball, soccer, and basketball. And then on the weekends, we do tournaments where the teams, travel team tournaments for baseball. A lot of AAU teams come there, similar to what they do in Cooperstown. And the tournaments have really caught on. They're very competitive. We get teams from all over the Northeast, Canada. We get teams from Montreal that come every year, teams from Toronto, New York, a lot of New Jersey teams, and then, of course, from throughout New England. Sometimes teams come from Pennsylvania and Maryland because of the competition. And they stay overnight. We have tournaments, and then we have some activities for the families. We have a campfire by the lake, and we cook more. Yeah, that's a happy time for everybody. We cook s'mores, and then we got, of course, we got basketball courts and you know, boating and swimming. So when the kids are done with their games, you know, they go out and they take a break with a swim before they come back and play ball.
Definitely
Dan,
more laid
I'd
back
be remiss.
Than.
Okay.
No, I was going to say it's definitely more laid back than you know, working in the front office for a Major League Baseball team. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun to, you know, see the kids develop and the families. You know, some of the kids that I've had at the camp are doing pretty good in baseball. We had this kid, Scott Wiseman, who pitches for Clemson now. I gave him a scholarship to the camp, and he got to work with a Major League pitching coach, my friend Herman Starrett. And he got a scholarship to Clemson. He got drafted by Detroit, and he's doing good. And then, you know, last week, my son Dana, I had four kids on his team. We did an 11-under AAU team when he was 11 years old. He's 18 now, so that was, what, probably about 2003. And we came in fourth in the state. We had some good talent on that, and a lot of those kids are on the Acton-Boxborough High School baseball team. It was doing pretty good, and they had their picture in the Boston Globe last Sunday. There were four of the top six hitters in their league. So,
and now they played together since they were age 11 all the way up to high school.
We have tournaments for kids starting at 10 and under. And then one of the coolest things that we do is we have this parent-child weekend. This year it's on Father's Day, and it's 2 days of activities for fathers and sons, or fathers and daughters, or mothers and daughters and sons. And they come usually, a father will bring a kid or two, and we do a home run derby. We do, games where the fathers play against the kids. We do games where the fathers play against the fathers. We do clinics. We've had former Red Sox manager Joe Morgan out there, and a friend of mine, Jeff Reardon, who's a former Major League closer, comes out there. And it's a nice weekend for the kids to get acclimated and see if they want to come to the Sports Academy.
That's really nice. Now, Dan, I'd be remiss if I didn't. I've been covering the Flyers-Bruins series, and I'd like to get your take on it and see what you think, if you think the Bruins will clinch it tonight.
Well, you know, I watched the game with my mom on, was it Friday night?
Yep.
Yeah, so that game went into overtime. And, you know, the Bruins are really skating good. And I can't believe how big hockey players are these days. I mean, those guys are huge. The thing about the Bruins is last year they got whacked in this round of the playoffs by Carolina. And, you know, they looked like they were sleepwalking. This time around, the Bruins are really skating. You know, I don't know enough about it to tell you that they're going to win.
You know a good amount, though. That's good.
Well, you know, I follow it. I know Peter Chiarelli, the GM, and he's doing a nice job. And the Bruins got some really good talent, and they're exciting to watch. Of course, their goalie's good. And you know, it's funny. When I was in Montreal, we used to have four – seats right behind the Canadiens' goal.
Wow.
And that's where I really got to appreciate hockey. And Patrick Waugh was the goalie, you know, for two periods down there. And I remember seeing this great big guy, tall. I said, they're not going to be able to get anything by this guy. And, you know, what a fantastic goalie he was. And then I remember the night that I wasn't in Montreal then, but you remember when Patrick Waugh got in trouble with the coach?
Oh, yeah.
And the coach let Patrick Waugh stay out there. He was having a terrible night. He had given up like 7 or 8 goals. And Patrick came off the ice, and he said, I'm never, ever going to play for that guy again.
Right.
And then they sent him out of town, and I said to myself, I said, they should have fired the coach, man. I said, because they ain't going to find no Patrick Waugh again.
No, he went on to win the Stanley Cup with Colorado.
Yeah, exactly. But I said to myself, I said, I know Patrick's a little hard to handle, but you don't send the best goalie in the history of your franchise, particularly if you're the Montreal Canadiens, out of town. You know, it just doesn't work that way. You got to figure out a way to work with him because he's so important. But anyway.
Well, he's got the last laugh now because he's a coach now.
So. Yeah, I know.
Sounds like a Major League Players Union.
Right, and he's still got a great temper, I see. He got into it last year, I think.
Yeah, he did.
In one of his kids' games, so I don't know. I have always loved Patrick Waugh. I just appreciated his great talent.
No, that's really good. Now you made a trade. You acquired Pedro Martinez, and actually in our book we interviewed Delino DeShields. Give us an idea when you made that deal, what you thought Pedro was then, and can you believe he's turned into the Pedro that you know he ended up turning into?
Well, I was. A big Pedro Martinez fan after I saw him pitch in the Gulf Coast League when he was with the Dodgers. We had a team with the Expos in the Gulf Coast League, excuse me, and I went down and I saw this little, you know, frail kid out on the mound pitching like his hair was on fire. And he was throwing inside on all our hitters. He had great life on his fastball. He had a you know, drop-dead curve. You know, terrific knee-buckling curve to the right-handed hitters, and he had a changeup. I always remembered him then. And then when I got to be the GM of the Expos, I was friends with Sandy Johnson, and he introduced me to his brother Tim, and I brought Tim over from the Dodgers, and he had managed Pedro down in the California League. And then we also brought Kevin Kennedy over from the Dodgers, and he had managed Pedro Martinez recently, in fact, that year, for Albuquerque in AAA. And those guys were, both Timmy and Kevin are very good judges of talent. So those guys told me what I already thought. You know, this guy's got great stuff. He's going to be a big-time pitcher. And because they were in the organization, they also knew that the Dodgers weren't that keen on him. They didn't think he was going to be able to withstand the stresses of the innings that he would garner as a starting pitcher. So we knew that we had a chance to get him. And, of course, we made the trade for Delino. We actually had to replace Dennis Martinez's innings in the rotation. And it was a great trade for the Expos. And, of course, Pedro went on to win the Cy Young Award for them in 97. He had a great year, one of the best years of any pitcher over the last 50 years, that 97 year when he won the National League Cy Young Award.
Yeah, great scouting.
Well, we had inside information because both Tim Johnson and Kevin Kennedy had managed Pedro. And very rarely do you get that type of information come into your organization. I mean, those guys know talent, and they had been in the dugout with Pedro. So I didn't have any problem depending on them for talent evaluations. And, you know, particularly after I'd seen, I mean, Pedro Martinez is my favorite player of all time. He has this great flair. He has this great sense of showmanship to go along with his considerable talent.
You think he'll come back again?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate the compliment that it's good scouting, but it's not hard to identify the great ones because they're, you know, when you see it, you see it, you know you're seeing something special. And when I saw Pedro Martinez, I knew he had extraordinary talent.
Wow, yeah, it's almost like when you first saw me play, right?
Wait, you scouted Nico?
Yes, I scouted Nico. One of our scouts scouted Nico, a guy by the name of Harry Smith. And Harry Smith had been with me with the Brewers, and he had scouted players like Dale Swaim, who came up, played with the Brewers, Michael Felder, Chris Bosio, Greg Vaughn, and then, you know, he also scouted and recommended Nico.
That's awesome.
If anybody, Lisa, I just want to say, if anybody wants to call in and talk to Dan, our number is 347-994-1040. Yeah, that is pretty awesome that you scouted Nico. And Nico definitely had some good credentials, especially in the Florida State League. Is that where you started to know about him, or did you know about him at San Diego State?
Well, Harry Smith saw him at San Diego State, and he had recommended him to me, but I got a chance to see him in the Florida State League. I think the Expos had a team in the Florida State League when I first saw Nico. What years did you play in the Florida State League, Nico?
That was with we played against Felipe Alou. I was a 1990 player of the year there.
Yeah, right. So I was the farm director of the Expos then. And I spent a lot of time in West Palm because that was our home base, and I got a chance. And we owned and ran the team in West Palm, so spring training was there, and that's where. Were you with the Mets then?
Yeah, St. Lucie Mets.
Right.
And we had so much talent in that league with Pudge Rodriguez and Jeff Kinn and Kenny Lofton and. You know, obviously, you know, myself, but what some great talent there.
Well, you had a great year that year, right? You had a bunch of triples and showed good power and speed.
Oh, yeah. Just on-base percentage, over 400, just hitting like crazy, RBIs, home runs, stolen bases. I think I played first base and I stole over 40 bases. Just something incredible, and I don't think I'd ever have a year like that. You know, again in my life, but it was just an amazing year and a time for me, and it really got me into the big leagues. So I think you guys picked me up in the World 5 the next year.
Right, and you know, Felipe Alou was a great judge of talent. He always had a keen eye for players, and
yeah.
I had a lot of confidence in taking players on his recommendations.
Oh, I bet. Now, Dan, you started a league that is no longer, but since I'm a Jewish guy, I figured I'd bring it up, be fun to talk about for a minute. I guess it was the IBL, the Israel Baseball League, and you had guys managing like Ron Bloomberg and Art Shamsky. Give us an idea what it was like to be involved with that.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because this is one of my favorite subjects, and it was a really interesting project that I did to help develop the – is help you know, found and developed the Israel Baseball League. We had a vision to bring professional baseball to Israel, and we put together a plan, you know, to bring to fruition a bona fide independent professional baseball league in Israel. And the genesis behind the project was a Boston businessman by the name of Larry Barrett, and he approached me, and, you know, I said, yeah, this sounds great. You know, it had all the elements that are interesting, and I thought we had a really good chance to be successful, and we were successful to a degree in that we went around the world and we recruited and scouted players to staff six teams, and then in the summer of 2007, we were able to play a 45-game schedule. And we had, Art Shamsky managed for us, Ron Bloomberg managed for us. Of course, those are two guys that, they're both Jewish, and they made their name.
Yeah, I grew up in New York, so I certainly followed both.
Yeah, so they made their name playing in New York, and, you know, they were keen on the project. We also had Kenny Holtzman, one of the, you know, best Jewish pitchers of all time. He pitched for Oakland.
And, yeah, he was terrific on Oakland, although I'm a Mets fan, and he beat the Mets in 73, I'm pretty sure, and that upset me, but he was great.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was right. And then, you know, we had a pretty good year. I mean, we ended up placing 25 players. I sourced them to other teams in professional baseball at the end of the season. The best player that we got was this right-hand pitcher, Maximo Nelson, who we signed out of the Dominican, and he was one of the Yankees' top prospects, and he got caught up in one of those immigration scandals coming to the States, so he was barred from coming back to the States. So I ended up getting him a job in Japan with the Chunichi Dragons, and he's still over there pitching. We had some other, you know, pitchers. We had a pitcher, Juan Feliciano, who pitched for the Hiroshima Carp in Japan, ended up getting.
And I have to tell you, I love the MVP award, the Hank Greenberg award. Tremendous.
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, our hope and our dream was to, put together a sustainable league. The problem, well, I wouldn't say it's a problem. It was a huge challenge. And that was to develop baseball facilities over in Israel so that we could develop, a fan base. There's only one really bona fide standalone baseball facility in Israel, and that's in the village of Petah Tikva, which is a Baptist village a little bit north of Tel Aviv. And then, you know, that was the biggest challenge. And I was disappointed that we couldn't attract additional investment to keep the project going, but there were significant capital requirements to develop facilities. And
have you ever thought about having the whole league in that one nice stadium and just getting cameras and broadcasting those games, worldwide?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what we wanted to do. That was part of our plan. We may be able to regenerate that plan again sometime in the future, because I think there's a possibility for that, particularly if you draw players to the league from all around the world, which we did. I mean, we had players there from 9 different countries. We had players from Japan, the States, Puerto Rico, Dominican. We had players from Germany. We had players from Israel.
I think it's brilliant.
You know, I mean, it's a really cool – interesting project if we can get it together again. And, you know, the fact that we were able to recruit players to go over there, and, you know, they made a movie out of this, and the movie is Holy Land Hardball.
Oh.
And if people are interested, they can go to www.holylandhardball.com. And this movie about the project, which captures the human side of it and the personal stories of the people involved and the challenges that we faced has been shown a couple of times on the MLB network. And it's also been shown on some of the regional sports networks. But this year I think there's a tour going through minor league teams to show this film. It's part of a, overall entertainment thing. But, if fans want to learn more about it, there's a DVD, and it's a funny movie. The producers, Brett Rapkin and Eric Keston, they love baseball. And, you can learn more about the movie and actually buy it. You know, I've been to several temples where we show the movie and then we talk about the project.
Oh, that's really nice.
But if you go to holylandhardball.com, that's the area that you can learn more about the movie and the project. But I appreciate you asking. It's a really interesting project, and I really enjoyed it. And it was interesting to bring all the different cultures together over in Israel. And then, personally, to go over to Israel and, to tour the holy sites, that was a moving personal journey of mine, and I would have never done it unless I went there with this project in baseball.
Wow, we could probably find a great Muslim baseball player to play.
I used to joke that we used to go to the, I was dying to find a Palestinian to put on one of the teams.
And, yeah, a pitcher. There's got to be a pitcher. You know, they're so tall and thin.
My friend said, what are you going to do, go to the Gaza Strip and check out the kids throwing rocks at the tanks?
Yeah, they got the best arms. I'm telling you, they grew up throwing rocks.
Go scout at the Gaza Strip. But anyway, there's better places in the world in terms of the culture that understand, know, like, and accept baseball. But there is no more interesting place in the world to, do a project and bring all these different cultures together than Israel.
I agree. I think baseball could bring peace. I've seen it.
Well, it wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something if you could develop this project in such a way that it would improve relations over there?
It would be nice. Nico and I happen to write in our book about a global baseball league, Dan, and we're all for it. I mean, we think if you had a global baseball draft and you really went and got players globally and you really had some sort of global World Series or something even after the Major League season, I think there would be a lot of interest. I think that would be better than the World Baseball Classic, to be honest.
Well, I think there's an opportunity for it. There's certainly room for expansion of baseball around the globe.
Yeah, because these players, they're done at, what, age 36 now, Dan? You wouldn't sign anybody after 35 to $20 million a year, would you?
Well, I've always believed that this is a young man's game, although you can play a little bit longer these days, and particularly if you get some performance enhancements, you can you can play a little bit longer. But I think it's a young man's game. But I'll tell you what, there is an opportunity, I think, to leverage the experience of great players who want to continue a relationship with the game, and I think internationally is a good spot to leverage the veteran baseball people and also the players' interest in the game.
And Dan, do you have a website or anything?
My website for the Sports Academy is www.duquettesports.com. That's DUQUETTE sports.com. And if you go there, you can see all the things that we're doing at the camp in the weekend tournaments. And also, we have specialized instruction for baseball, softball, basketball, and soccer for kids that want to come there. And it's for kids ages 8 to 18. And then added a leadership program. We're adding a low ropes course, which a lot of youth groups like to access when they come to the camp, and that's going to be functional in another month.
And I just want to ask Lisa, do you have one last question for Dan? Because I know you got to get going.
No, I'm back. I mean, this is a fascinating interview. So, no, it's great.
Good.
All right, thanks a lot.
I got a question.
Good talking.
I got a question for you, Dan.
Yep.
In our book, Strike 3, in Chapter 11, we talk about change could help the game. And one of my primary premises for actually crossing the line and actually playing for ownership there in Montreal, and I believe I was one of the only players that was traded during the strike there. I was traded from Montreal to the Boston Red Sox, and maybe you can elaborate about how that happened a little bit, as well as my thoughts of even playing and crossing the line was because of the fact that I always felt that the minor league players, the men that were not on the 40-man roster, the additional probably say 100 players within the organization, I always felt that they should have some union protection and that they should be included in the union, and I had proposed a revenue sharing plan that included them into the union with the union leaders, Donald Fear. And I strongly felt that, and that's the reason that I played. And do you ever feel that someday that could change and they could include all players into the union and all players really could benefit from the game?
Well, I would hope that they would do that. I think that was – that was the key issue for players at that time. Are you going to take the opportunity, knowing that this may be your only opportunity? It may not come along. And, I knew that that was a possibility, but I thought over time that the union would change their stance and do what I thought would be the right thing, and that is include people that played ball, everybody that played ball in the union. So, you know, I was hoping that, you know, by now that enough time would go by for them to accept that, but I guess that hasn't happened.
Dan, we have a Facebook question. Just a basic, could you run down the five favorite players you have, Jewish ball players, who you think are the greatest of all time?
Well,
you don't have to rank them in order.
Hank Greenberg is generally is generally acknowledged as the top player. You know, I could make an argument for Sandy Koufax, of course, and then also Kenny Holtzman, the two top, you know, left-handed pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Youkilis is a great player, and since I signed him, I got to put him down on the list, right? He was signed by one of our scouts for the Red Sox, and Ian Kinsler is a top player too.
He is.
I mean, is that five?
That's four, and then you want to put Ryan Braun in there? Is that?
Well, you know, I was gonna get to Ryan Braun because we were supposed to put together a team. I put together a wish list of players that we wanted to have for Israel in the event that we were able to advance the league and get Major League Baseball to recognize us for the World Baseball Classic. And my 2-3-4 was Kinsler, Youkilis, and Ryan Braun. I thought that was pretty competitive, 2-3-4.
That's pretty competitive. It is.
Yeah. So let's put Ryan Braun in there. Yeah, and then the first baseman the Mets brought up, he's Jewish also. I think his mom's Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Davis?
Who's that?
Is that Ike Davis?
Yeah, Davis, the kid that
played
Ike
Davis?
Okay. Yep.
Yep. All right, we'll put Ike Davis as a runner-up.
Yeah, put him because I mean he's interesting. He's from Arizona State, and of course he's in a major media.
Oh, listen, you don't have to tell me. I'm a big fan. I was actually, I've railed on this show why he didn't make the opening day roster, but I'm glad he's up there now because he's really he's been impressing us.
Yeah, he looks like he's helping the team, doesn't he?
He is. He is definitely helping the team, and you know the only short. Falling in his game is a little bit with his fielding, but I'll tell you what, this kid could hit, and he could hit like crazy. I mean, he had a two-homer game already.
Right, and he can hit the ball the other way, which, you know,
yep.
leads me to believe he's going to have a good career.
Yeah, he did that against Lincecum yesterday, and it was pretty impressive. Even my wife, who watches all the games with me too, she was very impressed how he had a great bailout swing to right field and just dunked one in off of Lincecum at a key time.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty good player.
Well, listen, Dan, we really appreciate you coming on, seriously, and we appreciate the fact that you gave us a quote for the back cover of our book. That really meant a lot. You're always a top GM in the game. Sorry for getting you mixed up with Jim there on the radio, but you should be on the radio. You're good.
I appreciate it. A lot of people get Jim and I mixed up because, you know, very rarely do you have, you know, two GMs from the same family, right? And we ran teams on the East Coast, Montreal, Boston, Baltimore and New York, so.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks for having me on, guys. Good luck. I appreciate you being on.
Thanks.
Oh, no, thanks for coming, Dan. Hope to have you again.
All right. Okay, talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Tremendous, guys. That was really great. I mean, he was a top GM in the game. He started a league. I really love the guy's story, and actually I like that he ranked his top five Jewish players because – you know, there's a set that was coming out the last 4 or 5 years called the – I have it right here, actually, so I don't have to screw up the title name – Jewish Major Leaguer set. And actually, all those guys we mentioned are in the set, of course. And this was the last year of it. So people can go to the American Jewish Historical Society, just punch that in Google. If they want to get the card set, they can, and they can get a lot of those players mentioned.
No,
yeah,
Ross,
no,
really
I like
great
that baseball.
But as you know, I have to jet, so I will talk to you guys next Monday.
Okay, thanks, Lisa.
Okay, thanks, Lisa.
Oh, thank you, and please bash A-Rod away when I hang up the phone, because that's what he deserves. You know, Braden pitches a perfect game, A-Rod's quotes, Buster's going to read it. It's always about him, always about him. So, whatever. I'll talk to you guys next week.
We appreciate it. YankeePrincess.net. Go check it out. Longball Productions. Not Longball. Is it? No, it's Long Shot Productions. Sorry. Go check that out. That's what Lisa does. We appreciate her coming on the show every week. All right, Nico, here's the big quote. Ready? The big quote is, I've learned in my career that it's always better to be recognized for some of the great things you do on the field, A-Rod said in a brief statement during batting practice. Good for him. He threw a perfect game, and even better, he beat the Rays. Now, this is – just to recap, this is the pitcher where A-Rod basically said he'll never be anything, and this was after they had a little bit of argument because A-Rod walked on the mound after coming in for making an out. And that's probably something you never did, right? Because that's one of those things where the pitchers feel like that's their area, and while they're on it, that's their office, and you shouldn't do that. That's sort of like disgracing the game, correct?
No, I don't. I could care less. You know, if I'm going on the mound or something like that, I'm not really thinking that I'm treading on his mound or his turf or anything like that. You know, I'm just kind of – I'm playing the game. And
really? You didn't do that yourself, though.
I can't imagine I needed to go across there for any reason, but, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to it. I just ran in and ran off, you know. It wasn't like I was trying to avoid the mound or anything like that. If I ran a little bit on it, I may have ran on it, you know, but I don't remember me doing it in the major leagues, that's for sure.
Well, good for Dallas Braden, though. I mean, he gets a perfect game. I think it was a third perfect game in the last 10 years, if I remember seeing that stat. Unbelievable. I didn't get a chance to watch that because I watched mostly the Met game, but I did know it was going on, so I was following it, and very happy for the kid. I mean, it's something that doesn't happen. I mean, look, the Mets don't even have a no-hitter, so I have to say it's an amazing feat. A perfect game is something that is so hard to do, although I think they say statistically it's harder to hit for the cycle.
Then a perfect game with the walks, it is hard to hit for the cycle. You know, that could be, you could be right on that. I mean, it's just about equally as amazing.
Well, give everybody the website for the game. We only have a few minutes left. We did a lot of talking with Dan, and I don't want to leave that part of this broadcast out.
Okay, you want to visit us online, www.mlpo.org. Click play the game. We dare you. We're having an outstanding year. I'm up now 79,000 points. Catch me if you can. I'm kind of taking a break, Russ. I haven't predicted in the last couple of days just because I'm just so far ahead and, you know, everybody's behind me. So I'm trying to give out 10,000 points for anyone who can just get one game and predict it right. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, I predicted right last week. I picked I picked two games correctly, actually. I picked Oliver Perez to lose, and he did. And I picked
Cecil
Sabathia to win, and he did. You didn't give me any points. I didn't get anything out of you.
Well, now you got 20,000. You got 20,000. You're getting closer to my 79. You got anything today? What do you got today?
Yeah, I'm going to look at today's games. Let's see. We've got a couple minutes left here. So let me look at today's games, and let's see what we got going. All right. Monday's always tough because you don't have as much to choose from. But I will say this. With the Washington Nationals coming into Citi Field, with the way the Mets dropped that game yesterday, I will take the Washington Nationals and Luis Atilano on the mound. He's a rookie. He's 2-0. The Mets notoriously do bad against rookies. Historically, they've been bad against rookies. I would take him. I also would look around and see another really good one. I see Tampa coming into the Angels, the LA Angels, with Matt Garza on the mound. Tampa is an amazing 13-3 on the road. 13-3.
I take Matt Garza, too, in Tampa.
I'm taking
Bay
Matt
as well.
Garza all over.
Unless he's going against Weaver.
No, he's going against
Pinheiro,
and I take that game. I think both of those games are pretty solid. I have no issue with either one of them. If you want me to predict something later in the week, let's see. I'll look for something a little later in the week. What else did you notice, though, for this week while I'm looking that really caught your eye?
Oh, no, that's a big game right there, Garza. I mean, we'll see how he does. I think his last game he faced Cliff Lee, the former Cy Young winner, and just completely outdueled him. And really, I think has found his greatness. And it's going to be fascinating to see if he can do it again.
Was there anything else besides the perfect game from this past week that really got you going?
No. Today was, I guess it was just a pretty basic week. Pretty exciting things happened with the Dodgers. Andre Ethier had another walk-off home run. That was just amazing. The guy seems to be up at the plate with two outs in the bottom of the ninth of almost every game and has a chance to win it, and he just certainly does. One of the most greatest hitters that so far we're seeing here this year, over 10 home runs so far, hitting high 300. I think he's leading the National League in the triple crown categories of average, home runs, and RBIs. Just having a phenomenal start.
I'll give you a good matchup, but I won't pick this game. Philly-Colorado on the 11th, which, what, today is the 9th, so on Wednesday. No, tomorrow, Tuesday. Matt Holliday is going to go, and to me that's kind of interesting because we'll see how he's going to pitch on the road in Colorado. He's never pitched there. Well, maybe he's pitched there with Toronto. We don't know, but I doubt it. I'm not sure how many times they've played and if he played there. But the Phillies
Listen,
are only
anytime,
9 time, I was going to say,
anytime
the Phillies are only
Holliday. Yeah, but anytime Holliday's on the mound this year, it's a kind of a no-brainer. I'm going with the Phillies. I mean, it's
the guy is
just flat out awesome.
The Phillies are only three games over 500 on the road. It's in Colorado. It's food for thought. But here's one that I would take as a lock. On Tuesday, Seattle over Baltimore. Cliff Lee. He doesn't have a win yet this season. I think now this will be his second game back. I think Cliff Lee, you can go with him and take that to the bank.
Well, is he playing in Baltimore?
In Baltimore.
Against Burgesson or Matus?
Against Hernandez. 0-4.
Against Hernandez. Okay. I think that's pretty safe. You know, Cliff Lee, he hasn't come back as strong. I know he doesn't have the same offense that he's used to having in Philly, but... he's just, I don't know if he's the same pitcher since he's hurt his
Well, actually, he's had two games. I missed one of them. He had two games so far. He's got a 2.4 ERA. He's got a .87 whip, so he's certainly pitching well. In 15 innings, he's only given up 13 hits, and he hasn't walked a batter. So I think Cliff Lee's just fine. I think you're right. I think Seattle just needs to hit for him.
Okay.
I think that's an issue. But, again, everybody should check out our book, Strike Three. You can get it on www.lulu.com. And probably by the end of the month or beginning of June, it'll be everywhere. Amazon, you'll be able to walk in a bookstore, order it. As we said, Dan Duquette gives us a nice quote on the back cover. A lot about Nico in this book. A little about what I write about and even a smidge about me. But it's really something where we feel proud that we did and got a chance to really chronicle something that you lived through, Nico, and it was very historical in the game of baseball. And you can check out my site, sportsology.net and mlpo.org. And, Nico, that's going to pretty much wrap up this edition of the game. And what do you think? Anything else?
Yeah, thanks, Russ. No, thanks, Russ. I just want to also thank, again, Dan Duquette for coming on the show. It was great to hear his words and him talk a little bit about the game and the time that he played during the strike there, and just how his thoughts are. He agreed with me that he really believes it's time for the minor league players to be included in the union, and it's going to be a big bargaining session coming up again here in 2011. I'm going to be advocate myself for the minor leaguers to get into that union with some type of representation and some type of value for the organization. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. We're definitely in favor of it. We just feel like, you know what, those guys put it on the line all the time, and they actually seem like they're the testing guinea pigs for Major League Baseball, and they're actually held to a higher standard than Major League Baseball players before they pass anything in Major League Baseball. So I think they have it kind of tough. They don't live a glamorous life. They're eating McDonald's and whatever they get for their stipend for the day, which isn't a lot. And so we feel for them. But again, that was this edition of the game. We'll catch everybody next time. All right, it's over. Cool.
We done?
We're not streaming now, so this is like the archives, but we're not going to leave much for the archives. For everybody that listened, hey, thanks. All right, Nico, we'll do we have anybody coming on next week yet?
No, let me call you back. I got a call.
Okay, take care.
MLPO. Hello?